The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Election disinformation as the US goes to the polls and the Russians spreading misinformation on the Princess of Wales. To discuss all of this, I'm joined in studio by author and disinformation expert David Robert Grimes. Morning, David.
Good morning.
Now, as to the disinformation in the US, I have a sense by just looking at social media, it is very different than 2016. 2016 was all alt-right, back and forth out of 4chan, Pepe the Frog. It had a grassroots movement feel to it. Doesn't feel anything like that now.
Not at all. In fact, you just give me horrible flashbacks to Pepe the Frog, whom I had forgotten and would wish to forget forever. So yes, the New York Times ran a piece on this week about the difference between 2016 and 2024. Now, 2016 was the first American election that was absolutely dominated by disinformation. But the big differences, and there's several big differences. The first one is that back then it was far more blunt. It was things like a very badly made Facebook page saying Hillary is a Satan. It was a famous one that actually got a lot of traction. And it was quite obviously partisan. It was engineered for maximum attention for everyone. And it was usually quite obvious to spot what was disinformation. 8 years later.
Sorry to cut across you. I assume easy to spot if you were looking for it, because it was nonetheless effective with a large cohort.
And that's absolutely true, because people since we've become curators of our own media, and this is a big problem, we have poor media literacy. So if I was a Donald Trump supporter in 2016, disclaiming myself from that I certainly wasn't, but if you were, you could easily find a website that they engineered that said, this guy's the best guy ever. If you were a Hillary supporter, the same thing. People are inherently partisan, particularly when it comes to politics, and social media reflected that. But now it's slightly more subtle. It's slightly more subtle in that it's not just Russia in the game anymore. They are the main players, but Iran and China have become major players in the disinformation space on American elections in particular. Obviously, Russia backed Donald Trump. Iran prefer Harris. And China don't really care as long as they can mess up America a little bit in the whole thing. So they're all motivated by trying to exploit internal division. So now the big differences are they have, like polling companies, they've worked out who they need to aim their message at. So they're looking at swing states, they're looking at undecided voters, and they are catering memes to go after them. They've made up web pages that are designed for, say, African Americans or social media pages. They had one, I think Russia spent a lot of money, China spent a lot of money in a thing called Spamgate or Spamouflage, where they made up an alt-right American personality on four different platforms. Another thing we're seeing is multimodality on platforms. It used to be just Facebook. In 2016, if you remember, you'd almost always just see it, sometimes on Twitter, but mainly on Facebook. Now it's multi-platform. It's going right down to local forums. So if you're interested in cars, you could have Russian disinformation people trying to get you on there. If they think that the people that won't vote or will vote a certain way are interested in a thing, they will infiltrate those groups.
What about the social media giants and their role in all of this? Because Meta made noises about feeling that it should have taken more responsibility post the 2016 election. Twitter before Elon Musk did similarly. Have they done more to prevent bots, spam and disinformation?
They have done less. So what has happened is in 2020, there was some action taken. Meta in particular took some action to start putting trusted sources. So they would say, look, this is a genuine news site. So whether it was right-leaning or left-leaning, it's a genuine news site. It has some source validation. It has some journalistic integrity. So we'll run that. And they started putting more of a strict control on disinformation. But it started hurting their bottom dollar because people really want to click onto those terrible links. And Zuckerberg and Meta decided in this election they were going to abandon it. Because at the end of the day, they care more about revenue than they care about democracy. With Twitter now owned by Elon Musk as X, which is basically, if you've been on it recently, it's a megaphone for the far right and disinformation, as we've spoken about in this show as well, Musk spreading it himself, the situation is much worse. And TikTok in China doesn't care either. So now actually, in 2020, we had some breaks on it. 2024, we have none.
Now, explain one thing to me that I don't understand. We talk a lot about the subtlety of the algorithm. We talk about the subtlety of disinformation. But the man who owns Twitter, as case in point, who I assume has access to all of these things, is being as unsophisticated as it is possible to be in the spreading of propaganda. He's basically just roaring at his supporters that you need to go vote Donald Trump. Does that mean that it's not as subtle as we thought? Or is there some cleverness to this that isn't immediately obvious?
I think it shows that Elon Musk isn't as smart as people think he is. Right? He's certainly not. He's standing on stages with Donald Trump. And we talked about this recently. His motivation is that he wants to get rid of some federal regulation for his companies and get more contracts. It's very transparent and very financial. But with people like Zuckerberg, they're interested in, they're not coming out for either candidate, but they are interested in people being on their platform. I think in the future, we will look at social media companies the way we look at cigarette companies. They want to keep you on. They want to keep you hooked. People who spread and engage with disinformation are the most engaged users on the platform. So in 2020, when they started putting up some gatekeeping there, they started losing people engaging, which is their advertising revenue, which is their entire business model. So there are less guardrails this year. The other thing that has changed the game massively is artificial intelligence. Now, there's been jokes this year, this day about Michael Healy Ray using a fake Taylor Swift endorsement. He was obviously doing it tongue-in-cheek. That is happening in much less tongue-in-cheek ways. There's a recent deepfake video about Tim Walz claiming that he was a child abuser that went viral on the deeper red parts of social media. It was entirely faked. It was from a Russian source. But at the same time, it was convincing enough that it was passable, or it chimed in with people's already existing partisan tendencies. So we're in uncharted territory.
Now, whenever misinformation and disinformation gets discussed, one of the questions that gets raised, or one of the defenses that gets put, is motivation. Sure, why would Russia want Trump in? Because he's strong, or whatever it might be. But often I assume the motivation is not to create a particular result. It's to create division.
Absolutely.
Princess of Wales is case in point.
Let's get into the Princess of Wales. So recently, the UK have had to sanction several Russian-aligned actors and a company. We've talked about the social media design company, the social design agency, and they've put sanctions on them. David Lammy made a statement about this week. They have been spreading disinformation in the UK for quite some time. And back in March, they spent a lot of their effort spreading disinformation about the health of the Princess of Wales, Catherine. Now, she was sick at the time and undergoing treatment, and there was a lot of speculation. You might wonder, why would they invest hundreds of thousands and sometimes millions of dollars in something that looks kind of frivolous, celebrity gossip? The reason they did that is that they're engineering existing divisions and existing discussions. So at that time on social media, people were openly speculating about the health of the Princess of Wales. That conversation was happening. Russian actors see that conversation is happening and use it as a Trojan horse so they can get in with more controversial takes. So if you come in there and go, oh, we're talking about this, this is my little bit of information on this, you suddenly can start introducing more and more extreme topics. And again, there's existing divisions there as well. So that is one you point there. You always want to find where there are fault lines, fissure lines, and anger. Anger is the number one predictor of whether you can make something go viral. So if you can get people angry enough, outraged enough, you can do very, very well. And this is not news to people that specialize in making disinformation. It's pretty much how they pivot around.
Why then has it not been responded to by global regulators and global states with a degree of alacrity? Because we saw the report into Brexit and what was done there. We saw the congressional report into meddling in the 2016 election. There are a lot of people who have looked at referendums across Europe and raised questions about state actors and that. How is it that there is such a lag in regulating and preventing that from occurring?
I think there's two reasons. And the first one is that we have a superficially Voltairean view of information. We look at it like, oh, you know, we go around and we'll get all this information and we'll just select the best and the most accurate information, not realizing that we're humans and we'll tend to select what either alarms us the most, what makes us most angry or outraged, or what chimes with our pre-existing conceptions. So we actually cherry pick our own information. So the idea that we're homo economists, that we'll all make the rational decision, that is a very foolish thing to base policy on. And yet we've done it for years. When it came to social media, we had a kind of laxity in regulating it because we figured, oh, people won't be silly enough to believe that. Yes, they bloody well will. And that's what we're realizing now. But the second thing is the problem is now metastasized to the extent where it's no longer a national problem. Like most, we've seen in Ireland, we've talked about it a lot on this show, a lot of our anti-immigrant sentiment is coming from Russia, is coming from China, or agents working on their behalf, some in America as well. So how do you combat a truly international problem when social media companies themselves have revenue comparable to entire nations? So we need pan-European regulation for this, absolutely. And I've said on this show, and I'll say it again before, we need to start treating social media companies like publishers. The same way we'd hold news talk to a standard, Facebook, and they've always been able to put their hands in the air and say, oh, we're just a platform. But the problem is they're an incredibly powerful platform that shaped the narrative and have a vested interest in you. They're like they're selling tickets to a dogfight. Like, well, we're not hosting the dogfight. Yeah, but you're selling the tickets to it, aren't you?
David, thank you very much. David Robert Grimes, disinformation expert and author there.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.